Something that should be obvious to all of us, I'm sure you can identify with this, is the reality of God. We're all aware of that. Most of us were called and baptized many years ago. That was the beginning of our conversion. For some time, it was, for some of us, you know, it was our introduction to what we have come to know as God's true religion. I suppose for all of us, but some of us had beginnings in religious life in our families, but this was different. It was God's true religion. All of us, it was the beginning of the undoing of our concept of God in every aspect of our lives. There began to be an astonishing change in us. Now, we've all been reared and we've lived our lives in what we know to be a nation that God has blessed very mightily. We understand that even today, as such elements of his reality have been written all over its history on buildings in Washington, from the Declaration of Independence until today. God's mark is left there indelibly, even though society is trying to remove all that. So regardless of our personal beginnings, we all have some concept of God. In a general way, we all understand the reality of God. But today, I want to ask you a personal question. Is God real to you? That's my title question. Is God real to you? Now, think about the following scenarios. We'll look at these. If you've just escaped a very, very close traffic accident, and I'm sure as you look back, many of us have. If you've just been anointed for a very serious affliction, and lo and behold, the affliction disappeared. If you've just been to a doctor concerning a long health issue that's been plaguing you for years, and he gives you a very simple solution, well, all you have to do is this, that, and the other, and it goes away. If you've been praying about an issue regarding a neighbor or school or at your place of employment, most of us are out of school here, but I include that, or with a family or a relative, you know, we all have issues with other people. Some serious issues from any of these sources that appears there can never be a solution to, and it suddenly goes away. You know, you live next door to a guy that, well, there he is. And all of a sudden, it goes away. How'd that happen? Sometimes we may have a tendency to write off all this as just happenstance. Well, you know, it just happened. It's just. Well, you know, time takes care of that. Do we think any of these things just to be a coincidence? When out of a clear blue sky, as they say, a financial issue may be solved, and we've all had those. Some of them were solved, some of them weren't, but that's beside the point. When your money lasts a lot longer than you could ever have supposed it would. Now, not many of us have that, but it does happen. Let's look at some biblical examples regarding the question, is God real to you? And the first example I want to mention here is Noah. Noah could have casually written off the great flood. He might have said, whoa, looks like rain today. Who would have expected a rain this time of year? Well, I just happen to have this ship I've been constructing. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. But we know Noah did not reason this way. God was personally real to Noah. Noah had been close to God for many years. That's how this thing came about. Maybe Noah could have lost faith in God, because after this monumental miracle God had performed that salvaged humankind and rescued it from all evil that it had embraced, there was the problem after the flood that occurred involving his sons, that where he had too much wine, whatever that issue was. Did Noah lose faith in God to rescue him from that issue? We don't have any biblical statement to that effect. We are to assume that Noah stayed true to God. He stayed understanding and in a close relationship with God. Sometimes things go wrong in our lives. Does that mean God's not real? Here's another example, Lot. Turn Turn to Genesis 19. We'll go there in a minute. Lot, after God's miraculous intervention that saved him and his family from being destroyed in the inferno of Sodom and Gomorrah, at first, Lot didn't seem to take the angels seriously when they were trying to remove him and his family from the area. Did that mean he had lost faith in God and deny his existence? At any rate, after he saw the explosion, Lot became a believer. Genesis 19, let's read some of that. Genesis 19, verse 17. And it came to pass when they had brought them forth abroad that he said, escape for your life. Look not behind you, neither stay you in the plain, but escape to the mountain, lest you be consumed. And verse 18, Lot said, Oh, not so, my Lord. Behold now, Lot said, not so, my Lord. And then he went on to say, your servant has found grace in your sight, and you have magnified your mercy. You've conducted a miracle here, which you have shown me in saving my life, and I cannot escape to the mountain. I can't escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Oh, don't make me go to the mountain. I've never been to the mountain. I'm a plains kind of a guy. Surely there's another way. And he said, verse 20, behold now, this city is near unto, and it's a little one. That was the little city of Zoar. Let me escape there. I mean, it's a small city. They're not nearly as evil as Sodom and Gomorrah. So yeah, maybe I can take a refuge there, me and my family. Verse 21, and the angel said unto Lot, see, I have accepted you concerning this thing, also that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. So the angel allowed him to go into Zoar and kind of take refuge there. But then the angel went on to say, haste thee, escape there, for I cannot do anything till you be come with me. In other words, Lot, get with it. We can't do anything until you get some kind of shelter. Make up your mind. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, etc. And then the next morning, exactly the next morning, the Lord rained upon Sodom and Gomorrah. Brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. That sounded like some kind of atomic blast, but who knows. Then in Genesis 19 there, verse 30. And so Lot went up to Zoar, he went up out of Zoar. After the blast, he went up out of Zoar and said, whoa, this was too close. And he dwelt in a mountain, the place that he didn't want to go to, and his two daughters with him. For he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, not just in the mountains. He dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. Lot not only feared Zoar, but he didn't fear mountains anymore. So God kind of became real to him at that time. God kept his word. Lot didn't necessarily think he was the only man on earth. I think his daughters kind of concluded that they were the last people on earth. And that's another story. Sometimes when our personal plans don't seem to work out, we blame it on God. That doesn't mean he failed us. It usually means that we failed him. And speaking of, in another example there, the only one left, Elijah. And we're all familiar with the famous account where he called down fire, and fire came down. He said a short prayer, and fire came down. And snuffed up the sacrifice that was there. A miraculous miracle. Elijah was used. God used Elijah right there in front of Ahab. But something happened afterwards. All of a sudden, he became fearful. And if you want to look at that, 1 Kings 18, verse 19, if you'd like to look there, 1 Kings 18 to 19, 18 verse 19. He had actually executed 450 prophets of Baal after that incident. Now therefore send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel and the prophets of Baal, 450. That is how that all happened, and they were prepared. These were people who ate at Jezebel's table. They were part of her religious system. But Elijah began, after this incident, to fear, of all people, Jezebel. He feared and thought he might be the only one around, faithful to God, and that everyone else may have been out to kill him. Otherwise, why would he have run away so fast? 1 Kings, I told you to go to 18. Go to 1 Kings 19, verse 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. And Jezebel made a statement here. She sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not your life as the life of one of those you have slain by tomorrow about this time." It was only a threat. It didn't happen, but it was a threat nonetheless. But when Elijah saw that, he arose and went for his life. Then in verse 10, 1 Kings 19, verse 10, he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've thrown down your altars and slain your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, I'm the only one left. And here they seek my life to take it away. They seek my life." And God later assured Elijah in verse 18 of that same chapter, 1 Kings 19, verse 18. God kind of set Elijah straight. He said, "Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him." So God assured Elijah he wasn't the only one left. God was renewing his reality to Elijah at that time. So I ask the question again, is God real to you? And while we're at it, is Satan the devil real? I know that sounds awfully religious to mention Satan, but from all we know in the Bible indicates he's fully a real being, as real as God the Father and Jesus Christ. Satan is mentioned in Revelation 12, if you want to look at that, Revelation 12, verse 10. Revelation 12, verse 10. Satan's mentioned there as going before God on a regular basis, accusing the brethren. That's you, that's me, that's all of us. Revelation 12, verse 10. "I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night.'" That's still taking place. Now, why would he do that? Why would a spirit being do that? We didn't do anything to him. But Satan still hates us, as well as all mankind. He hates humankind. But if we respond to God's calling, bear in mind, Satan is toast. Can we say that? That's the first reason Satan comes before God and accuses us. That's real. Satan is a terrorist. We understand terrorism in these days. Satan comes before God and accuses us. Now, another reason, why does Satan accuse us? Another reason is that most, if not all, of his accusations are real. They're true. And you might say, "Well, I didn't do that." But most of the time, we do it. Satan knows us as well as God knows us. And he knows what we do and how we do it and how we think. So don't be discouraged by this. Don't be discouraged. God has given us a process by which he and we all may deal with this problem. We have to admit, first of all, that Satan's accusations against us are true. There's a solution to that. We go to our Heavenly Father through our High Priest, Jesus Christ, on a daily basis. We may acknowledge those sins we may be aware of and ask God to reveal sins that we're not aware of, in order that we may repent of those as well. When we go through this process on a daily basis, we begin to understand certainly the reality of Satan as well as the reality of God the Father and Christ personally. If you doubt this process, just miss a day going to God in prayer. It is Satan that stands in our way. Satan is the one who restricts our belief in God. Satan creates all kinds of doubts and fears in our minds about the reality of God. God made us with a need to understand and appreciate our Creator. However, beginning with the Garden of Eden incident, you all remember that? Mankind looked at that need and began to view God from another perspective rather than needing him. Adam and Eve looked at it from a different direction because of Satan's intervention there. While the whole line of Satan fed Adam, and he fed them a lie, he instituted in them not only the belief that God had lied to them, but planted the seed of doubt as to whether he even existed. After all, after that account, they lived upwards of 1,000 years. After God had surely told them, "You shall surely die." But it's kind of interesting that long spans of time kind of alleviate problems, and like, well, maybe it wasn't that bad, and maybe God did lie to us, and maybe, you know, maybe we can smooth through this thing. They had so much of a separation that they didn't need a God, and he became so far away, he became unreal to them. As I said before, long spans of time will do that. We've come almost 6,000 years from that point. We must all understand that instead of evolution taking place, none of us believe in evolution, mankind has instead devolved instead of evolving. Mankind has devolved to such an extent that God has become like some kind of idol to most people in the world, even religious people, that's carried around in their pocket. They mention him once in a while, but they don't really take God and God's instruction and guidance seriously. Once again, is God real to you? I have 3 points here. Is God real to you? 3 points to help you understand the reality of God. Number one, God created a place for man to inhabit that was made to perfection, specifically for human beings. None of us can doubt that. We have experienced, and quite frankly, Mr. Morrison has given us some PowerPoint messages that absolutely prove these things. Let's start out with where we're at in the solar system. The Earth is exactly where it should be in order to accommodate human beings, right? Anything closer or further away would be a death sentence for all humanity. The Earth would go up in flame. It's a funny thing, even with all the talk of what's built, is man-made climate change. You hear a lot of that these days. The air is still good, for the most part. Even some years ago, you remember there was an oil leak, a big oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. It was a big issue at that time. But after a period of time, and after the oil company had been fined an enormous amount of money, when they went back to clean up the coast and deal with the tainted water of the Gulf, they found that the ocean water had kind of neutralized the damage of the spill. And the authorities could hardly find evidence that there had been an oil spill. It seems that even with man's tremendous ability to defile God's creation, and we all know that can happen, God has built into his creation a self-correcting component that effectively heals the corruption of man that man inflicts upon it. He heals that. He's capable of healing that. In another area, science thinks it has it all figured out. All the building blocks of matter. Take the atom, for instance. That's small. The Gulf of Mexico is large, but the atom, that's small. At one time, it seemed a big thing. When man learned to split what he thought was the smallest building block of matter, the atom. That was been many years ago now, you know, 60, 70, 80 years ago. Since that time, they've learned that the closer they look into the atom, science keeps finding smaller elements that construct the cells of matter. There seems to be no end to what is termed inner space. On the other hand of the spectrum, at one time we thought our Milky Way was all there was to the universe. Now we realize that there are millions, even billions of systems in space like our own Milky Way. In like manner, we realize that physical matter is made up of cells broken down into small elements, atoms, which at one time were thought to be the smallest definable building block. They can't figure out where to stop splitting the thing now. And since that's been split, we know that it's broken down into smaller, definable parts. In fact, the further science looks at inner space, the more it looks like outer space. That there may, in fact, not be an end to inner space. In the same manner, there appears that maybe there's not an end to outer space. I don't know. Who can say? There's a lot we don't know about God's creation and God as creator. We call God creator, but we can't possibly realize all that that creation entails. As human beings, as smart as human beings are, we can't possibly realize the full meaning of our creator and creation. How do you explain that? There has to be a creator that encompasses all wisdom and knowledge. And that the more we look at that fact, the more insignificant, as impressive as human beings are, and the life we see all around us, the more insignificant we as human beings turn out to be. God has called us that, biblically. So, 3 points to help you understand the reality of God. That was number one. Number two, examine yourself every day. Examine yourself. We're coming upon a time when we're asked to and given instruction to make a personal examination prior to Passover. Who or what is the center of your universe? Is it God, or is it some human being or thing you may idolize? If we just take each day as it comes, and it's very easy to forget God's part in it. You know, you can forget it. We get up and we go to bed. We get up again and over again. So after a while, we forget why we're here until some gargantuan trial descends upon our lives. And we've all had those. Then we remember God. We remember God. It's like you're all familiar with the atheist. The atheist got in an argument where he was arguing against the existence of God, who then was saved from some tremendous physical disaster. The atheist was saved, okay? Who then uttered these words. The atheist said, "Oh, thank God." So we tend to remember God when we're in trouble. Even atheists do that. How do we get past that? Well, one way to examine yourself each and every day. How do we do that? One way is to take inventory. Ask yourself these questions. You know, I mentioned we get up, we go to bed. We get up, we go to bed. Make your days have some substance and ask these questions. Why am I here? Why did God call me? Did God actually and in fact call me? Or did I just imagine that many years ago? Have I done something wrong today? And you can ask, have I done something right today? Sometimes we don't know the difference. God can determine that. Have I offended someone today? Inquiring minds want to know, as they used to say. I'm sure that terrorists that we hear of every day don't take any of these things into consideration. Probably not the criminals that we hear of either. They don't think about, why am I here? Even some religionists who have glossed over God's law and developed a way of life that does not really consider what God thinks of it, probably no real self-examination there either, even the religious world. The majority of society around us that has developed during the past 50 to 60 years is a society that pretty well makes its own rules. I begin to observe this in the 60s. It was hard for me to understand what was going on. There was a big change going on there. But it had to do with dropping God's opinion of things and doing things their own way. So that daily self-examination that you do every day is something we normally take into consideration only once a year, around this time of the year. That's Passover season. But it's something we certainly owe ourselves to do personally, daily. We owe that to ourselves to do that. We owe it to our Creator to do it. And quite frankly, we owe it to all those around us, our neighbors, our family, our brethren that we come in contact with, other human beings. We owe them all that self-examination. Is God real to you and me, to all of us? So, point three in our quest to help us understand God's reality. Number three, ask God for the humility that Christ taught. Now, no one normally becomes naturally humble. That comes from God. True humility comes from God. So you ask for that. If God's real to you and me, we'll be able to recognize answered prayer. One of the personal characteristics we should ask for is humility. And our model is Christ himself. Can we see Christ's example and understand the godly humility that he was? Then, as we see his humility, can we properly ask for and recognize it in ourselves? Now, be careful, because if we're not very careful, we can actually take pride in our personal humility. Turn to Luke 22 for an example here. Luke 22. Those personal disciples Christ was in the process of calling even had the wrong idea. Luke 22, verse 24. And there was also a strife among them, which made them, they were trying to figure out who should be the greatest. You know, there were 12 of them, and some of them had to be greater than some of the others. And Christ said to them, the king and Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. We understand that politically today. But you shall not be so. He that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief as he that does serve. For whether he is greater, if he sits at meat, or is he serving? Is not he that sits at meat? But I am among you as he that serves. Christ said, I am among you as he that serves. That was his example. Then on another occasion, turn to Matthew 25. On another occasion, when Christ was explaining godliness to his disciples, once again, Matthew 25, verse 34. And here he's describing about, you know, separating goats from sheep, okay? We're all familiar with that. Come ye blessed, verse 34, of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. He's talking about those who are his family. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. And he goes on to explain elements of life which were deficient. I won't read the rest of that. When Christ spoke those words and those hearing it, they said, when did we comfort you? And when did we visit you when you were sick? When did we visit you in prison? And Christ replied, when you did it to others, you have done it to me. Those people who he is speaking to weren't even recognizing it in themselves. It had been so ingrained in them that they did good. The instruction that Christ had given them, that they did good without even thinking or recognizing it in themselves. They were out to get points. They took no pride in what they had imitated in the actions of Christ. They didn't even recognize that they had done any good. Once again, I say that they weren't trying to gain points. So in closing, I will say, true humility is that way. We should all ask God for that humility. My 3 points. Is God real to you? 3 points to help you understand the reality of God. Number one, remember the creation you see all around you. It did not just happen. Number two, examine your life every day as you follow the righteousness of God in Christ. And number three, you don't get this unless you ask for it. Ask God for the true humility that Christ taught. These are things that can come only from God. Seek them, not through man, not the humans, but through him, as you look forward to the Passover season.